A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Text appears in white letters. A Netflix comedy special.
Please welcome Chelsea Handler.
Title, Chelsea Handler, The Feeling. Chelsea arrives on stage wearing a golden jumpsuit. She greets the audience and shakes some spectators' hands. Chelsea looks at the audience.
I'm just trying to identify my homosexual guests in the crowd tonight. Hello, man, okay, yeah, you're straight, sir, I can tell by your outfit, but you are gay.
Thank you and welcome, thank you for being here.
Where are the other homosexuals? Have you already been segregated? Okay, thank you. I have my entire career to thank to homosexual men and women. Thank you.
She smiles and glances at the audience in the balcony.
And I also want to shout out homosexual men specifically for all of the contributions that you guys have made to society that go unnoticed and underappreciated. Do you guys remember when monkeypox came on the scene? No, you fucking don't. You know why? Because every gay man went and got vaccinated inside of 30 days so that the rest of us straight people never had to deal with monkeypox. That's what they did for our communities. I was excited when monkeypox came on the scene. I was excited about a new pandemic, new parameters, new rules. I remember the CDC was on TV one morning saying the two ways to avoid contracting monkeypox were to buy A, avoid anal penetration.
She makes a surprised look.
It just sneaks up on you at the bank.
She puts a hand in her pocket.
So like, whoopsie doodle. Or B, avoid sharing a towel. First of all, if you're doing anal, you're sharing a fucking towel, assholes. But we didn't have to deal with that. I didn't have to deal with finding out about monkeypox because of what gay men did for this country. They are patriots, and I am so appreciative. They got rid of monkeypox so quickly that I realized I was missing out on anal penetration. I was like, if these guys are so excited to get back to something, I want to try it. And guess what? Anal penetration isn't just for homosexual men anymore. It's trending, and you might want to give it a whirl. It could be a big pill to swallow in the beginning, but you never know. And my hope here tonight is for couples who have been together for a long time. Have you guys ever done anal? Okay. So my hope here for tonight is for newer couples, older couples, to go home, look at each other, and think, let's try anal, and think of Chelsea Handler. I want that to happen.
She holds her mic with both hands.
And for people who are first-timers and you're not with someone, but you're also looking to get anally penetrated tonight, I want you to have a strategy, okay? You have to pick a medium to small male.
She looks up.
Can't do that with 50 Cent. Joe Coy, maybe, but not 50 Cent.
Chelsea laughs.
The other upside to anal penetration is that there is a 90% chance you will not get pregnant, and I love those odds. I have a friend who's always like, Chelsea, you're not gonna have a baby, you're gonna die alone. I hope so. What do you think, I wanna drag a bunch of innocent children down with me? My baby's on my deathbed being like, mommy, don't go. As soon as I get diagnosed with any mild disease, I'm gonna have my favorite drug dealer put me down in the back of a barn like a fucking horse, okay? I'm not trying to stick around any longer. People think I hate children. I don't hate children. I don't. If you want one, go get one, you know? Good luck with that. I don't care. I just don't want them so close by me, you know, all the time. And the real reason I don't want children is not because I hate them. It's just because I found the whole thesis of childhood so insulting. Like, I was so annoyed when I was born. I remember being born. I remember being in that hospital room, shooting out of my mother's Pikachu, and I remember these bright lights everywhere, and then someone smacking me on the ass and just thinking, are you fucking kidding me? And then I came home to my family, and there were already like five other kids there. And I remember looking at my parents like, who the fuck is in charge around here, you know? Do I have a dowry? Like, how the fuck am I going to upwardly mobilize out of this shit?
She touches her left cheek.
I had a problem right away. You know, I grew up watching the Brady Bunch, like I'm sure many of you, right? With the six kids and the mother and the father and then the housekeeper, Alice. I was like, where the fuck is our Alice? I couldn't stand my family. I couldn't stand my father. He was an asshole. I knew that right away. And I was like, I was in this baby body, but I felt like a woman, you know? I felt womanly, like I wanted to start a business and the catering or something, you know? And my dad and I would just go at it from a very early age, so we're not on the same page at all. And then when I was like around 7 years old, he's like, we have to take her to Disney World or something so that she can see how other children behave, you know? Something's missing, something's wrong with her. And so my parents decided to take us all to Disney World when I was 7 years old, which meant that we were gonna take, my dad was a used car dealer, so that meant we were gonna drive from New Jersey to Florida in my dad's blue and white molester van. With no motel or hotel reservations. My dad didn't ever think about anything like that. He would just pull over at whatever Econo Lodge or Amber Alert hotel he found. And we'd pull into like a Holiday Inn Express and it would say in big neon lettering, no vacancies. And my dad would pop out of the car enthusiastic. And then I would pop out of the car after him and I'd be like, hey, Stevie Wonder, did you see the fucking sign? You dumbass. I couldn't believe the incompetence of my parents. And then we got to Disney World. That's a farce too. There's a bunch of grown men dressed like mice. Are you kidding me?
Chelsea stares at the audience walking on the stage.
Even at seven, I was looking for a bar. The most intriguing thing I saw at Disney World was there was this other seven-year-old boy. You know, the girls and boys age at different paces, so he may as well have been 2 months old. And he was face down on the cement at Disney World, and he was kicking and screaming, and he was throwing a tantrum. And I remember the feeling I had. I remember looking at him, and I was envious. I was like, oh, are we allowed to do that? Like, that's how I feel, you know? And I came home from that trip after I saw that kid throw a tantrum. I was like, I'm more interested in that. And then I went to kindergarten or first grade, whatever you're in when you're seven. And then there was this boy, Aaron, he was on the playground. And I came back from that trip and I saw him in the corner of the playground. And he was like sitting in the corner of the playground going, fuck, 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 shit, 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 shit. And Mrs. Keenan, our teacher, was standing across from him and very sweet about it. Like she was very understanding. And I walked over, I was like, what is going on over here, Mrs. Keenan? You know, why is Aaron allowed to speak like that? And she said, oh, Aaron has Tourette's syndrome. And I was like, I would also like to get that.
She looks down at the spectators, stone-faced.
And you have to understand, my dad was so against me. He made me read Anna Karenina by Tolstoy when I was fucking seven, because he thought that would keep me out of trouble. So that woman kills herself by jumping in front of a train because she doesn't have a boyfriend, you know?
She frowns.
He made me read Moby Dick, which is 1,300 pages, when I was 7 years old, and I had to give a book report. I would go into school, and they would be like, Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. And I'd be like, which one, China or Berlin? Like, and I'd come home to my father, I'm like, you have to dumb it down. I can't relate to my fucking colleagues. So I went to the library, I got a book about Tourette's. I read that in fucking 30 seconds. I was like, I like all of these points. I came home that day, I was like, I have Tourette's syndrome. And I waited, I sat at the dinner table. My mom and my dad would come home from his non-job of selling used cars that were all in our fucking driveway. And my dad came home and I could not wait. I was sitting on the edge of my seat. I sat at the dinner table waiting for like, you know, 40 minutes. I was like, practicing all my new words.
She sits on a stool.
And then my dad sat down across from me. I'm like, fuck you, pussy motherfucking ass cucker. You suck cock.
And then I threw in a hard double squid. I went, like, I picked up a tick too, so back the fuck up, asshole.
She slowly puts a hand on her knee.
I slept like a baby that night.
She glances around.
Then when I was 8 years old, I broke my arm. And this was a pivotal moment in my life. We had a summer house on Martha's Vineyard. I know that makes us sound like we were wealthy. We weren't. I don't know how my dad got that house. I'm sure he stole it from somebody. But I broke my arm, and I was outside. I tripped over our dog, whose name was Muttley. And when I broke my arm, I saw my bone coming out of my elbow bone was outside of my arm. And my brother Glenn, sorry, came and scooped me up. He's like, oh my God, are you okay? And I'm like, I don't think so. You know, like, this is, I'm like, I don't even know, do they have insurance? Like, what do we do next? And he picked me up and brought me up to my parents. My father looked at the bone coming out of my arm and said, we should ice it.
She looks distraught.
And I remember just, I had had it, you know, I had had it. I was 8 and I was like, I don't have time for these kinds of shenanigans, okay? I looked at my mother and I looked at my father and I said, who the fuck is in charge around here? The two of you are like an ashtray on a motorcycle. I have to go to a hospital now. And I went to the hospital with my brother Glenn and I got a cast. And this was exciting because then I had something physical to threaten people with. The cast started from here and went to here. I'd never felt more powerful in my life, like a gladiator. You know? And I came home and I started to threaten my brothers and sisters who were much older than me, but they were humoring me, but it didn't matter. I felt dominion. I was like, yes. And I remember organizing our dinner table on Martha's Vineyard one summer night, and I was telling my brother, you sit there and you sit there. And then I told my father, you sit facing the wall and think about what you've done, you know? And then I sat down.
She sits.
And I slammed my cast down and it hit the top of my Pikachu. And I was like, ow, yeah. And then it slid down like 2 more centimeters, and I was like, what is that zone?
She touches her crotch.
And I went up that night and found out exactly what that zone was. And I came home for the fall. We would spend the summers on the vineyard. I came home to New Jersey that fall. Now I was like, I was 8 years old. I was about to turn 9, and my best friend, Jody Rapatti, said we're having a back-to-school sleepover at my house on Friday night at 7:30. She goes, everyone's going to come over, and we're all going to get the feeling.
She looks around and widens her eyes.
I didn't know what the feeling was, but I was like, I'll fucking find out, you know? Like, I'm not going to run with the wrong crew. I know how to fucking be cool. I walk in, and there are 9 8-year-old girls face down in their sleeping packs. Just going like this.
She imitates the girls rubbing their crotches energetically.
I was like, let's fucking go!
She jumps and rubs her crotch.
I couldn't get enough of myself. I showed up at that sleepover at 7:30, and I didn't get up from that position until 7:30 a.m. when Jody's mom tapped me on the shoulder and said, honey, we're gonna need you to leave. I left that sleepover, I had rug burns on my forehead. I was so thirsty and dehydrated from sweating so much into my pajamas. I was like, does anyone have a Capri Sun, please?
Chelsea adjusts her long blonde hair.
And when you're that young, you're 8 or 9 years old, you're masturbating, you're not really, you don't even know what you're doing is masturbating. You're just like, this feels amazing. Like, why didn't anyone tell me about it?
She looks down.
You're not making direct contact with your Pikachu, you know? Like, you want a thicker material, like the thicker the better. You want some traction. You want like a corduroy or a thick denim or what's underneath a boat, a rudder. You want a rudder. You want like a wall. You see a corner and you're like, I'm gonna fucking get you.
She walks on the stage.
And when no one says anything to you, like, hey, stop jerking off, you fucking pig. You don't think that anyone even knows what you're doing. So I just did it all the time. I'd come home from school, I had a banana seat bicycle. Now we know what those were for. I had a banana seat bicycle. I'd go on little errands with my fake family that I created, that I would go and drop off at lacrosse and volleyball. I had 2 fake children, Lucas and Sadiqua.
She puts a hand in her pocket.
2 different dads, obviously. And I would take my banana seat bicycle, I would hit a pothole and just fucking ride it for like 30 minutes. My neighbor once called my mom and she's like, your daughter's been in our pothole in front of our living room window for 45 minutes.
She smiles.
Then I got home that night. My mom's like, where have you been? I'm like, traffic.
Chelsea glances around and looks up.
I'd go into school. I'd go into math class. And they had those desks with the apertures, you know, the openings in the desk. And I'd have a trapper keeper in the desk and a ruler in the trapper keeper. And I would take the ruler. And I could always do one spin. I'd always call it a spin. I'm like, do I have time for a spin? And I would take the ruler and I'd be like, you know. I could do one round and remain alert, you know, like, I wouldn't start sweating. I'd be like, yeah, like.
She sits on a stool.
So I'd always do one and I'd be like, and then I'd put the ruler away. And masturbating as a young person is just like masturbating as an adult. You do one round, you climax, and you're like, you're disgusting. Get away from me. Don't fucking touch me again. And then 30 minutes later, you're like, one more time, one more time. So I would do it. I would think I'd be done, you know, but I couldn't resist myself. I couldn't get enough. So I would take the ruler back out, and then I would completely lose my shit, you know, during the class. By the end of class, our math teacher would be like, 7 times 7. I'd be like, 49!
Sitting on the stool, Chelsea adjusts her hair and looks into the distance.
So this was a humiliating time in my life that I didn't even know what was happening. And then we had Thanksgiving dinner with my family, which means my 6 brothers and sisters, myself included, my mother and my father and my grandparents. And if you're the youngest of 6 children, you understand that nobody really respects you, you know? They didn't respect my opinion on international or global politics or anything that was going on in the world. And Thanksgiving is typically pretty fucking boring. So I grabbed a ladle from the kitchen.
She looks at the audience stone-faced, with a hand on her knee.
And I thought, I hope I don't have to use this, you know? I hope that you don't reduce me to using a ladle to masturbate at Thanksgiving. I hope that you respect my conversation enough that I don't have to jerk off, okay, during a fucking holiday we know nothing about. So I go and I sit down at the dinner table and I tuck the ladle underneath my thigh. And I do one little bit spin, and I'm like, okay, you know, remain alert. No one knows what's up. And I don't know what happened after that.
She rubs her knee.
I don't know if I blacked out or I lost the plot. But all I remember waking up to is hearing my mother's voice. And my mother was very sweet and European and very much the opposite of what I am. And she said, Chelsea, Chelsea. We need you to open your eyes.
She closes her eyes.
And in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, it's over, it's over, it's over. And I kicked the ladle to the bottom of the floor, you know. I was like, get away from me, you fucking rapist.
She looks down at her feet.
And I open my eyes and I see my whole family and their heads are bowed and like they're all looking down and, you know, shame. And my grandfather is rubbing my father's back, like, so sorry about your little whore daughter.
She imitates her grandfather rubbing her father's back.
And I look and my mom said, sweetie, that's something that you want to do in the privacy of your own room. And I'm like, mom.
She curls up on the stool.
Stop talking! And my brother Roy stood up and goes, she does it all the time!
She stands up from the stool and smiles.
Humiliating day of my life. I did not masturbate. I did not touch my own vagina from the age of 9 to 40.
She raises her eyebrows.
9 to 40, even with tampons, I had an applicator. I'm like, you stay away from me. You're fucking trouble.
She runs sideways on the stage, then walks.
And then when I was 10 years old, my mom told us we were going on an airplane ride from New Jersey to California to visit my grandparents. I grew up watching Love Boat. I thought, like, Love Boat, airplanes, you know, everything's so romanticized. I couldn't wait to be on an airplane. I had a briefcase, a little Smurfette briefcase. I had kitten heels on. And I was flying with my 2 sisters to California from New Jersey. And we board the plane, and I walk past the first class section. And I stop, and I'm like, this seems like my group. And my mom's like, this is not your group. Go to the back of the plane.
And then she slowly explained to me that we had 6 children in our family and we will never, ever be able to afford to fly first class. And I was like, speak for yourself, bitch.
She stares down at the audience.
I came back from that trip more motivated than I've ever been in my entire life. I was like, fuck this family. I'm like, obviously, you guys raised me, you know, but I have to split ties with these people. If they're okay flying coach, we're not on the same page. But I was only 10 and we were going to Martha's Vineyard for the summer and I was like, what can I do as a work, like a working woman? Like, how do I start a business? I felt very entrepreneurial, but I had no real ideas. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll start like a lemonade stand, but there's not enough of a profit margin. So I decided to open up a hard lemonade stand. As a 10-year-old, I'm like, I'll serve gin, whiskey, and tequila. I just need someone to open up the lemonade stand with me. And my sister at the time was a recovering Mormon, so she was out. I was like, get the fuck away from me. We're not on the same page either. And I went around the neighborhood on Martha's Vineyard and I canvassed the neighborhood. And I'd walk up to every rental house and be like, hello, my name is Chelsea Handler. I'm 10 years old. I'm opening up a lemonade stand and I need a business partner. Do you have any other 10-year-olds that I can play with? And then this family said, yes, we have a 10-year-old. His name is Nelson. They sent Nelson down the stairs and I started grooming Nelson right away. I was like, Nelson, do you know how to make a fucking whiskey and soda? Let's go. Nelson and I made $79 on our first day as 2 10-year-olds with a hard lemonade stand. $79 was a big deal.
She smiles.
It was a big deal. By the end of that first week, we made $359 selling hard lemonade to parents and anyone over 10. Like, obviously, I had guidelines. $359 as 2 10-year-olds? I couldn't believe it. I would count my money, I would smell it, I was like, oh. And then I had a cigar box and I would tape it shut just so my dad couldn't steal it from me, you know? And at the end of the week, when I made that $359, I gave Nelson his commission, which was $3.59.
She sits on the stool.
He was over the moon. I was like, stick with me, Nelson, I will show you the way. He's like, this is more money than I would have made if I had lost 3 teeth in 1 week. And I realized then, you know, I was too mature for these other 10-year-olds. I was like, I have too much womanhood in me. I have to go out on my own. And plus, my body was coming in together. And my buds were bursting, you know, and I knew it was time to get my body off the streets. And I was like, what else can I do? What else can I do? I was like, oh, I could babysit. There are no parameters around babysitting. Nobody can see, you can be 10 and babysit for a 4-year-old. Nobody gives a shit. So I decided to change businesses and I called every hotel in Edgartown, Martha's Vineyard. And I said, hello, my name is Chelsea Handler. I know I was 10 a few weeks ago, I'm 15 now. And I can babysit for up to 3 children at one time. For any of your last minute guests who need babysitting plans, please send them my way. I'm very, very experienced. I spent that summer babysitting for a 14-year-old boy.
She makes a disappointed look. She stares in the distance.
Jeremy. And Jeremy was on the spectrum. It was before everybody knew about the spectrum. I knew something was up with Jeremy, you know? I connected with him. His parents wanted nothing to do with him. I'm like, I'll deal with Jeremy, okay? You guys go out. So I had Jeremy, and then my business started to catch on, and then I got these 3 other clients. I would babysit for these 3 girls from Brookline, Massachusetts, these 3 sisters. I would babysit for them from like 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then I had a reprieve, I had a break, until I had to deal with Jeremy every night at 6. And so during that time off, as I was getting very involved in my own business as an 11-year-old, you know, I was getting very confident. Like, I was like, oh, it's female empowerment. You know, I started a business, I'm making money, I need a break. I'd go into this deli every day on Main Street in Edgartown, and I'd get a bagel with butter, a Twix bar, and a Sprite. And I would take a bite, and a sip. And it was like a phantasmagoria, you know, of excellence. I was like, this is what, fuck the feeling, this is what business owners are doing, you know? Taking lunch breaks by themselves because they're so tired. And when I'd go into this delicatessen, there was this girl that worked behind the deli, and her name was Martha McIntosh. And I want you to picture Amy Winehouse as an 11-year-old. She had like the big beehive and the thick black eyeliner, and I was attracted to her right away. I knew that she had seen things that I also wanted to see. And I had never met anyone that was faster than me, you know? I was like, oh. So I'd go in there every day and make googly eyes at Martha. And then finally, one day, she asked me to come back to her house. She said, do you want to come back to my house after my shift today? And I was like, definitely. And I went back to Martha McIntosh's house, and we walked by her parents who were outside on a porch smoking a joint. I'm like, this is exactly the kind of parenting I was looking for.
Chelsea looks up.
And then we went into her room, and she hands me a Corona, and she says, do you drink? I'm like, yes. I'm 11, let's go, you know? And the next day, I went over there, and she hands me a cigarette, a Camel Light cigarette. She hands me my Corona. I'm drinking the Corona. She hands me the Camel Light cigarette. She goes, do you smoke? I'm like, Martha, ever since the day I was born into that fucking hospital room, I have been dying for someone to offer me a fucking cigarette. Yes, I smoke. Let's go, okay? What else do you have up your sleeve? So I started going to Martha's every single day in between my shifts, you know? I was exhausted from being a child laborer. And I go to Martha's house, and then on the Friday of the first week, I'm sitting there, I'm smoking my Camel, I'm drinking my Corona. You know, I feel finally alive for the first time in my life. I'm like, finally, you know, I have an ally. And then she said, hey, do you want to go into my closet and take your pants down? And I was like, definitely. Like, what's next?
She smiles.
And we go into Martha McIntosh's closet. I pull my pants down, and she goes down on me for like 15 minutes. And I could not believe my good fortune.
She fidgets on the stool.
Oh my God, I'm sitting there drinking my Corona, smoking my cigarette. I felt like Matthew McConaughey. I was like, oh, run, oh, run, oh, run. Oh, I loved Martha. We were so close.
She lowers her gaze, still sitting on the stool.
You know, I went there every day. She'd go down on me. It was amazing. I'd come home, and my sister, the virgin one, would be like, every time you come home from Martha McIntosh's house, you smell like alcohol and cigarettes. Who knows what's going on over there? I'm like, oh, you'll never know what's going on over there.
She smiles.
And then she told my father, she's like, every time Chelsea comes home from Martha McIntosh's house, she smells like alcohol and cigarettes. And my dad's like, well, she seems a lot happier.
She walks on the stage.
And then it was the end of the summer. I went to Martha's every day, obviously, you know. And it was the end of the summer, and we were in her closet, and she's going down on me, and then I'm finishing my drink and my cigarette, and she pops her head up and said, okay, you know, it's your turn.
Chelsea shakes her head and grimaces in disgust.
And I looked around, I'm like, who's someone else here? Who are you talking to? What? And I realized what was happening, the exchange that was happening, and I had a decision to make that day. So I put my cigarette, I pulled my pants up, I said, it was nice to meet you, Martha. Good luck with everything.
She mimics holding out her hand to Martha.
It's never gonna be my fucking turn. Ew, and that felt cold. Like, I, you know, it was my first lover, and I had to leave her like that. Because she wanted reciprocity, you know? I remember leaving for that fall, going back to New Jersey, and I thought about her as being my first lover. I was like, I hope she's okay, you know, I hope she doesn't kill herself. And when I came back the next summer, I was 12, and I went straight to the delicatessen, as a responsible ex-lover would, to check on my first lover and see if she was okay. And I saw her across the room behind the delicatessen, whatever that is called.
She looks up.
Meat slicer. And I saw that she had braces installed over the winter break.
Chelsea grimaces and touches her left cheek.
And I thought, somebody got out of there just in the nick of time. No, thank you. But the relationship in combination with my business, I felt like womanly, you know? I was only 13 years old now, I was 12, and then 13 the next summer, I could focus, I didn't have a lover. So I could focus on my business. I saved over like $7,800 by the time I was 13. And so I came home as a 13-year-old girl, and my mom announced that we were flying to California again.
to visit my grandparents this time. This time my grandfather was sick. And this time I was traveling with my two idiot brothers, Glenn and Roy. And I said, Mom, don't worry about my ticket, okay? I'll handle it this time.
She stares into the distance with a serious look.
And I went down the street to a travel agent that lived on our street and bought myself my own first-class ticket.
Chelsea sits on the stool and glances around. She grimaces.
And I didn't tell anyone because I could not fucking wait to see the looks on my brothers' faces. It was like Christmas morning for three. I could not wait to see the expressions on their faces. And we boarded the plane, and I had my seat and found my... I had a new briefcase this time. And I had my kitten heels on, you know, and I popped my little briefcase in the overhead bin, found my seat 2C, sat down, looked at my brothers, Roy and Glenn, and said, see you cunts at the end of the flight.
She looks into the distance, a hand on her knee.
It was so glorious. And then, like, an hour into the flight, my brothers come up from the first-class cabin. I don't know how they got through that curtain. But I'm sitting there drinking champagne, you know, celebrating. And all of a sudden, I see their two faces, and they're both standing there like idiots. And they go, you know, you can't do that, Chelsea. I go, what? I can't do what? You can't buy a first-class ticket and not give it to Mom or one of us. I said, I'm sorry, how old are you two? And my brother Glenn said, I'm 23.
She smiles.
And my brother Roy's like, I'm 24. And I'm like, so collectively, you guys are 47 years old, and I've gotten more pussy than the two of you put together. Get to the back of the fucking plane, and I will see you when we land. And that's why I don't have a daughter. So I don't have some horny 11-year-old that needs to get eaten out every 15 minutes and then demands to fly first class. I don't fucking need that shit. No dog that you rescue is ever gonna make you go to therapy with them or call you on your shit. And if your dogs, I have a very active drug life.
She walks to the right of the stage and hesitates.
If I had children and my children get into my drug drawer, that's a pretty big deal. If you have dogs and they get into your drug drawer, it's less of a big deal. They'll survive. And whatever the worst thing you could do to a dog related to drugs is like, well, you know what? It would have been worse if I never got you in the first place, okay? So just get over it.
She sits back on the stool.
The last time my two dogs were drugged, Bert and Bernice, they're no longer with us, and not because of drugs, but they were the last dogs, set of dogs that I had that were drugged. And this was at the outset of COVID. And my sister, Simone, she suggested that we go to Maine for the summer of COVID. She said, let's go to Maine.
She stands up.
There's a lot less people there. You know, we can rent a big house. No one will bother us. We don't have to subscribe to all these 6 feet apart rules. And it's fucking annoying here. And we'll just go. I'll send you some links to some houses. And just beware, they're old. They look like they were built at the turn of the century. And when I clicked on the link, I was like, which century, you know? I was like, these look like plantation homes. And she's like, well, it's a very Republican area. It's actually a Republican enclave in Maine. And I was like, let's fucking go. Nothing gets my juices flowing more than disrupting a Republican enclave. Nothing. I was like, let's go. I'll have sex with all my black friends and Asian friends. We'll do anal on the lawn all day long, saluting your fucking flag. And at the time, I had a huge impetus. At the time, this was when Andrew Cuomo was on the scene, okay? I want to take you back to the time where we were getting yelled and screamed at every morning on national television by this angry Italian meatball submarine sandwich. Fucking screaming saliva, you wear a mask, you wear a mask. I wanted to be his face mask. I was attracted to him. We were so dehydrated for real leadership. I was like, I want to be with him. I want to be the first lady of New York. And my virgin sister, the Mormon, was like, you'll never be the first lady of New York. You're a liability for any politician. I was like, And everyone was getting a crush on him. Like, all these women were like, Cuomo, Cuomo, I love Cuomo. And I was like, oh, I started to feel competitive. You know, COVID brought out the worst in all of us. I was like, okay, I have to get ahead of these people. I'm a celebrity. I can figure something out. So I called my publicist and I said, put me on The View. And they said, okay. And so I get on The View and I'm on a Zoom, you know, because it's COVID. And I'm on a Zoom with Whoopi and Joy Behar, and they're asking me about my quarantine, and I'm like, boo, boo, boo.
She rolls her eyes.
And then at the very end, I said, ladies, I don't want to get off this call before I declare that I would like to be penetrated by the governor of New York.
She looks surprised.
And Joy Behar's like, oh, Chelsea. I was like, you shut the fuck up, Joy. I don't need any feedback right now. I knew if I put it out there into the ether, you know? I knew. So I got off the Zoom. I was like, I looked at my dogs. I said, now we wait.
She pats her knee while sitting on the stool.
Three days went by. And my phone rang, but it was an unknown number, so I don't answer that. The message was incredible. The message was, hello, Ms. Handler. This is Andrew Cuomo, C-U-O-M-O. I heard from a little birdie in a tree that someone has a crush on me. I would like to pursue this further. My number is 917, la, 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 la. And then he goes, ciao. I was holding my vagina. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I didn't even finish listening to the message before I was in my car driving to my best girlfriend's house, and she's inside her window. I'm outside of her house because of fucking COVID and 6 feet apart, and I'm playing the message on my phone like John Cusack and Say Anything. I'm like, I'm gonna fuck the governor. The governor wants to fuck me. I'm gonna be the first lady of New York.
She jumps up and down.
Oh, it was amazing. And then he called me. We talked for like 45 minutes. I was like, oh my God, this is serious, you know? And then I floated the idea. I was like, well, I might be coming to Maine for the summer, so maybe I could swing by the Albany Mansion. We can have an outdoor COVID-friendly dinner date slash anal, whatever you're into. And he was like, I'm very interested in that. I said, so what do I do? Do I need to quarantine before I meet you? Like, what? He said, quarantine, schmarantine. I was like, oh, interesting twist.
She tilts her head and frowns.
And then once it became real, like I knew that I was probably gonna fuck the governor. Everyone was talking about Nipplegate at the time. People were talking about whether or not he had a nipple piercing in his in nipple, which obviously I knew he didn't. He's a straight 64-year-old white male. He doesn't have the guts, you know, to do that. But I was curious about his nipples, and I would zoom in on pictures of him and on Instagram. And it, something curious was going on with his nipples. They were headed in a very southerly direction. And I had never faced a storm like that before, you know? And my older sister's like, just take it from behind. It's safer for everybody. There's a pandemic. You don't even have to look at his nipples, you know? You have to do this. Because I was getting cold feet. And she's like, are you a fucking patriot or aren't you? I'm like, I am. I want to be. It's just a lot to handle. So we rent this house in Maine. We go to Maine, I start texting him, I'm with my whole family, a group of friends, and we have this big house on the water that was built in, I don't know what time period. And I start texting him, I send him pictures of me like on a paddleboard, and all of a sudden he stops responding. And in the first couple days, I was trying to, you know, convince myself it wasn't over. I was like, oh, no, he's a governor, he must be very busy. And then on the third day, I came downstairs and said to my sister, Shoshana and Simone, I was like, guys, I haven't heard from Andrew Cuomo since I got to Maine. And my sister, the virgin one, was like, I told you, he can't fuck you, okay? Someone in his office caught wind of this little liaison or dalliance and put the kibosh on it. He can't be screaming at the entire country to stand 6 feet apart and then fuck one of the loudest people in the world. He just can't do that. And my other sister's like, text him one more time.
She looks down as she walks.
So the next morning, I'm out. I'm in a bikini. I'm on a Vespa. I have a face mask and a helmet on and sunblock everywhere just to show him I'm safe, you know?
And at the very last minute, I pull my top down, so I'm topless in a bikini, and my brother Roy is taking the photo. And my sister Simone comes out and sees us, and she goes, "Chelsea, what the fuck are you doing? That is your brother." But at this point, I was so desperate. I knew I had been rejected by him, but I was so desperate. And also the idea of a topless photo of Chelsea Handler transmitting through his iPhone or Andrew Cuomo's iPad onto the big daily early morning briefing of COVID on a national level made me so joyful, you know? Like, I just wanted to give the country a present.
She smiles.
And then when I realized he wasn't responding, it wasn't happening, you know, then it sunk in and I felt dejected. You know, people who were single during COVID were scared. Like, what if we don't ever get penetrated again, you know? And then I felt terrible that I hadn't brought my dogs, Bert and Bernice, with me to Maine. And so I was sitting with my brothers and sisters. I'm like, I'm really depressed. I've been rejected, you guys, and I don't even have my dogs. I don't even know how to get them from California to Maine. I mean, I can't fly them. That's egregious. You know, I'm not going to do that. And my brother Roy said, "What about a choo-choo train?"
She frowns.
And my sister Simone said, "Never mind that, we will find a way." And she came downstairs 20 minutes later and she said, "I found a couple that will drive your dogs from California to Maine and they will be here in 48 hours. I was like, is that even plausible? I mean, I didn't know if that could happen, but you know, when things are going my way and I get answers I like, I don't ask a ton of questions. I'm like, okay, great. It was Monday night at 7:15 and Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m., this couple rolls into this house I'm renting in Maine, and Bert and Bernice stumble out of this, like, little hitch behind their van. And I'm so grateful. Anyone who has is a dog owner here knows exactly how grateful I was when I saw them. I ran into the house we were renting. My brother is in the kitchen cooking, and I grab two cocktail glasses, a bottle of Belvedere, and I start making them a thank you cocktail, you know? And my brother Roy goes, who's that for? I said, it's for the couple that just dropped off Bert and Bernice. It's a thank you cocktail. He said, don't make them more than one round.
She looks taken aback.
I said, why? What's your problem? He said, look at me, Chelsea. Anybody who drove from California to Maine in 48 hours is on crystal meth.
Chelsea stands up, a hand on the stool.
So I bring the drinks out and I said, thank you so much, you know? And the guy's like, oh, sorry, we can't have more than one drink. We have to be in Florida by midnight.
She smiles.
Whoa. And for the next 2 days, my dogs, Bert and Bernice, were walking around just aimlessly into paddle boards, hitting their heads, just listlessly. And I was looking at them like, oh my God, what is wrong with my babies? And my brother Roy's like, what's wrong with your babies? I'm like, look at Bert, he's bumped into the same tree 3 times. He's like, what's wrong with your dogs? You just sent them on a high-speed methamphetamine car chase across the country because a governor wouldn't fuck you during a global pandemic. So now they're detoxing from crystal meth. That's what's happening.
She holds her left hand up, then puts it back in her pocket.
He's like, thank God you never had a real baby. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm so sick and tired of being insulted about my parenting. You try raising 2 dogs on 1 income.
She walks on the stage with her hand in her pocket.
And then I got a text from Barbara Bush, George W. Bush, our former president's daughters. You know, the twins, Jenna and Barbara. I'm friends with them. I met them at this event called the Glamour Women of the Year Awards many years ago in New York City. And I met them. I was with my 2 sisters. They were sisters. We bonded over being sisters. I call them Sissy. It's easier to call all women Sissy, so you don't have to remember anybody's fucking name. And I get a text from Barbara Bush, and she says, Sissy, we hear you're in Biddeford Pool, which is the part of Maine I was in, the Republican enclave. And she said, we're here, you're in Biddeford Pool. We're right around the corner. We want to come and say hi. I said, of course, Sissy, come on over. And I see Barbara Bush. She comes down the driveway. It's this big, steep driveway of this house we're renting. I see her come down, and then I see, like, 2 Secret Service men behind her come down. And then I see the former first lady, Laura Bush, come down, and I'm like, you know, too many Republicans. Luckily, it was COVID. I was like, everyone stand 6 feet away, okay? And we're circling around, and I bring them out onto the balcony, and we're looking at the ocean and on the terrace of this house. And Laura Bush, the former first lady, has a dimple. So I'm a sucker for dimples. Like, every time I see one, I'm like, oh, they're innocent, you know?
She smiles.
I'd be a terrible juror. I just base all of my opinions on people's looks and dimples. And then my brother Roy walks out on the porch and sees Laura Bush, the former first lady, and says, you look familiar.
She mimics pointing her finger at the woman.
And then they were leaving, and Barbara Bush, my friend, was like, oh, I said, oh, we do Pilates every morning outside if you want to come over. She was newly married at the time. She said, yes, we're going to come over every morning and do Pilates with you. So they started coming over every morning. Everyone was banging on about pickleball at this point. I blame COVID for pickleball, right? We didn't have to hear about fucking pickleball before COVID. Pickleball, that is not a subject that I can take seriously. When people bang on and on about pickleball, that is not real exercise, okay? So shut the fuck up about it. You would burn more calories shoving an actual pickle up your asshole on a pickleball court than playing a game of pickleball. Pickleball and Burning Man, I don't want to hear about that either. Stop trying to convert me and bring me there. Burning Man is a bunch of rich people trying to share for the very first time. So everyone's talking about pickleball, and Barbara Bush is like, Sissy, let's have a pickleball tournament at Kennebunkport, you, the handlers versus the Bushes. And I was like, oh, no, Sissy, that's cute, but no, I'm not coming to Kennebunkport. I don't want to be seen with your father, okay? I can't trust myself in the company of your father. I have outbursts, and I'm as surprised as the next person when they happen, okay? I don't know when I'm going to go off on someone. And when I do, I'm also scared for that person. I certainly don't want to do that on someone's property, you know, be mean to your father or confront him about who knows what. And she's like, oh, Sissy, don't worry. I'll make sure Daddy's getting a massage. I was like, don't call him Daddy. That is not my daddy. And I was like, we're not going. And my whole family, my sister, the virgin one, was like, don't take this opportunity away from us. We want to go to Kennebunkport, okay? Just because you and your political bullshit, you shouldn't take this opportunity away from us. Just take one of your drugs and subdue your personality.
She looks up.
And my sister's like, take two. She's right, take two. And my brother Roy's like, she needs four edibles if she's going to calm down. And that makes her just like almost a mute. So I took 40 milligrams of THC to go to Kennebunkport. 40 milligrams. Yeah, and I'm like, that doesn't even, listen, I understand that drugs aren't for everyone, they're for me. We have a great understanding, we get along great. It's almost like if I am sober, I have too much of an advantage. So I took 40 milligrams of THC, we show up at Kennebunkport. We're on this pickleball court. I have a visor on and cargo short. I look like a giant bull dyke. I'm as high as a kite. I have big, thick sunglasses on. And we're on the pickleball court. And I'm not doing anything because you don't have to when you play pickleball. You just stand there. And we're not on the court for less than 30 seconds before I hear the voice of the former president of the United States. And he's like, oh, I hear the funny lady is in town. And I'm so stoned. I'm like, oh, no. I thought Daddy was getting a massage. And I look across at the sister, the one that I trust, you know? And she's like, it's him. Shut the fuck up. Don't talk. And I was like, boo. And I look over, and George W. Bush is coming towards me with his arms open. He's like, come here. I'm like, back the fuck up. I was like, there's a pandemic going on right now. You stand back. And he's like, whoa. I'm like, a pandemic? I know you're on your little own private Idaho in this little island you live on or whatever the fuck this shit is. And then my brother Roy comes off the court, looks at the former president, and goes, you really look familiar.
She shakes her head.
It's embarrassing, you know? And he's like, come on, I want to show you my art collection. He's like, I'm a painter. I've made a lot of paintings. I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't
I don't want to come with you, please. Like, I'm so stoned, all I want is for this to be over. And he hooks his arm in my arm. He's like, come on, what are you scared of? And Barbara Bush is like, just go with daddy, sissy, go with daddy. I'm like, stop fucking calling him daddy. And we go into this house and it's just him and me. And I'm like, what is happening? Why is this afternoon so long? You know, when will this be over? And he shows me his first painting, and I'm not someone who knows a lot about art. I'm a Philistine, and I don't feel even compelled to pretend that I do, you know? I'm not someone who's like, I know, I don't. To me, art, I'm so glad it's there, you know? It's like a duvet cover. Thank you.
She shakes her head and holds her mic with both hands.
Thank you for being here. I don't need a ton of backstory. I'm not that interested.
She touches her lips.
So I'm looking at the first painting, and I'm just trying to think of something to say that's like, you know, about a painting. I'm like, oh, and he goes, take your sunglasses off so you can see the painting. And reflexively, I'm very honest. I said, Mr. President, I'm as high as a kite right now. You need to know that out of respect for the office. And he went,
She mimics the president imitating her smoking.
And I was like, yes, I am. And then we went up. There were like three landings, three different staircases. All of his paintings were on these landings or on these stairwells. And then when we got to the last painting, I really thought, like, I have to think of something to say. And I just was staring at it. And I said, the paint is so thick.
Chelsea stands still.
And my sister Simone was like, okay, time to go. She was at the bottom of the stairs because she had followed me. And I was like, oh, thank God, you know, she would never have left me alone with him. And I also wanted to get out of there, you know, before I ended up blowing Dick Cheney. I was like, what is going to happen next? And then before I left, I said, oh my God, can we get a selfie together? And he said, of course, you know, and I take a selfie of George W. Bush and me, and I run downstairs, get in the car with my brother and sister, and sent that picture directly to Andrew Cuomo.
She nods. She smiles as she looks at the audience. Chelsea looks content.
I was like, good enough for a president, but not good enough for a governor. And then it came out like, you know, 6 months later that Andrew Cuomo was a predator and was like harassing everyone at his workplace. Obviously he was a predator and harassing everyone. He was harassing all of us on TV every day. I just fucking loved it, you know? And then my virgin sister called me and she goes, it's interesting how you extricate yourself from these situations. She goes, you could have been dating Andrew Cuomo. You would be canceled right now. I was like, you sound disappointed. She goes, it's just interesting. Think about all the times you get close to a bad situation. She goes, it's almost like our dead mother is upstairs in heaven just protecting you and making sure you don't fuck your life up. She's like, remember Martha McIntosh when she had her braces installed? You got out of there just in the nick of time, too. She goes, this is just this all over again. You just got out of there. You didn't make the decision. It just happened. I said, that's a very interesting way of looking at everything. That's how you think our mom is spending her time in heaven? By cock blocking me on the ground?
She smirks.
She's like, think about Bill Cosby. Think about that. I had forgotten about Bill Cosby. I was in my 20s performing at the Borgata Casino in Atlantic City, and Bill Cosby was performing. I was doing two nights, he was doing two nights. And after the first night, I'm walking through the casino, and the casino manager came up and said, Bill Cosby wants to meet you in his hotel room at 3 p.m. I was like, I'll fucking be there.
She stares at the audience.
And I had a security guard with me and the guy who was opening for me. And we walked up to Bill Cosby's room. It was 2:50. I'm always early because no one picked me up from school.
And I'm waiting, and then I knock on the door at 3 o'clock sharp, and Bill Cosby opens the door. I grew up worshiping Bill Cosby. I grew up wanting my father to be more professional like Bill Cosby. I wanted my dad to have a gynecological practice in our basement, you know, with a swinging kitchen door and a fucking clean sweaters on. My dad would have never had the tenacity to get all the degrees necessary to become a gynecologist. He would have been more of a farm-to-table gynecologist. But I wanted to be part of that family. I wanted to be sisters with Rudy and Vanessa, and I wanted to fuck the shit out of my brother Theo. That's what I wanted for myself. Bill Cosby wanted to meet me. Bill Cosby knew who I was. Do you know how meaningful that was when I was at that age and we didn't know anything about Bill Cosby that we know now? I couldn't wait for him to open the door, and when he did, he had that huge Jell-O pudding smile. You know, and he opened the door, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I jumped into his arms. And I was like, Dad, I'm home. And we held each other, you know, for moments. And then finally, he released me. And then the door opened to emerge that I was with two men that he hadn't seen. And his face turned from a Jell-O pudding smile into a big frown. And I didn't know at the time what was going on. Now I know that he was like, do I have enough roofies for all of these people?
She looks up.
And we walk into Bill Cosby's room, and we're sitting there, and he's got this huge palatial presidential suite, and I'm sitting there with my opener and my security guard, and he just starts laying into the guy that's opening for me, Bill Cosby, telling the guy that he'll never amount to anything opening for a woman. And at first, I thought are we on, you know, punked? Like, what? And then I realized he was like venomous and mean. And I was a young woman. I didn't know how to stand up for myself, but I had to, you know, I had to stand up for my friend. I was like, we have to get up. Like, this is awful. What is he doing? And we walked out of that room, and I'll never forget the three of us were so, it was the worst feeling, you know, that. Walking, we couldn't even say anything to each other. They always say, never meet your idols. And I've only had two idols, Woody Allen and Bill Cosby.
She looks down. She looks straight ahead, expressionless.
And then that story came out about 6 years later that Bill Cosby was roofying every woman that came to his hotel room. And so my virgin sister called me again. She's like, well, now we know why Bill Cosby was in such a bad mood that day. And I was like, little does Bill Cosby know that that roofie wouldn't have put a fucking dent in me. Thank you, New Jersey! Thank you for such a fun show! Thank you!
She claps hands with spectators in the front row. A spectator gives her a pink t-shirt.
Oh, thank you.
Chelsea waves goodbye. Closing credits roll. Written and performed by Chelsea Handler. Executive producer, Chelsea Handler. Executive producers, Michelle Caputo, Shannon Hartman. Directed by Shannon Hartman. More credits follow, along with photos of Chelsea as a kid and of her family. Copyright Netflix 2025. Production logo for Art and Industry. Logo for a Chelsea Handler production. Video description, Diffuse. Voice talent, Vito DiFilippo. Scriptwriter, Clémentine Martin.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.